just flames are pouring from the buildings now. This car is toppled, buildings entire, just crushed and crumbled. I'm not sure if it's safe to report from my vantage point. I really need to leave. So the fences informed me that the surrounding areas are in ruin. I see some people running now. And the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Another exciting episode of Aquaman and Firestorm, the Fire and Water Podcast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. It's been a little while, folks, you nuclear subs, and we are happy to be back. As we've always said, you know, we'll produce new episodes when a good enough reason presents itself, and we've got one today. And I'm one of your hosts, the Irredeemable Shag, and along with me, as always, is my cinematic co-host, Rob Kelly. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Shag. This is like that issue of Justice League of America, number 246, by the way, where they moved out of the Detroit League, moved out of their headquarters in Detroit and moved back to the Secret Sanctuary. And everything was like covered in dust and cobwebs. And everything. It's like that.
This trident is a mess, folks.
Okay. All right.
So we are here to talk about Aquaman, of course, not Firestorm for some reason, because
he doesn't have a movie. That's why.
That's exactly why. So Aquaman of the Lost Kingdom just came out on Max. If you have that at home, you can be watching that. And it also came out on the digital products in January as well. So in conjunction with the movie, DC, Warner Brothers, whoever, whatever, they coordinated a digital comic to be released to tie in with the film coming out on like Blu-ray, DVD, digital, all that stuff. And so there's a digital comic you would get when you purchased the Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom movie. And the name of the comic, and that's why we're here, folks, the name of the comic is Aquaman Through Fire and Water. Yes, literally an Aquaman comic with fire and water the name. Several listeners brought this to our attention, so thank you to all of you who did that. And frankly, I feel like DC putting fire and water in the name of the comic, I feel like DC's baiting us. Am I like out of line here, Rob? You tell
no,
me.
No, I think we should sue them. This is our copyright. What the hell are they doing? This is not. Yeah.
I like to think that there's people at DC who like know us, like, oh, those weirdos that do the Aquaman and Firestorm show. And they don't even realize we stopped like 6 years ago. Like they just think we're still doing it every week. Like there's enough content for us to talk about those two characters every week.
We're doing panel by panel at this point. We're just
exactly.
Breaking down.
In this one, Firestorm's hair is blowing to the left. So this comic, Aquaman Through Fire and Water, is a 22-page digital-only prequel comic. So it's kind of a prequel to the movie. And again, the idea was you buy the film, which came out January 23rd, and you get this this digital comic. And one of the nice things, too, was that DC also released this for free on their digital platform. So if you're a DC Infinite subscriber, like I am, you got this comic day and date, same time, January 23rd, completely available to you for free, which I love, and is a super fun way for me to read it. So I'm pretty jazzed about it.
Yeah, I love that they did that. I love that they did a digital tie-in, a comic tie-in to the movie. I feel like the movies don't make enough effort to kind of tie themselves to the source material. So that's super cool that they did this.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to get into it in just a second. We're going to talk about the digital comic Through Fire and Water. I'm going to say that name every time. Anyway, we're going to talk about Through Fire and Water. Then we're going to talk a little about the movie, Aquaman 2, some of our thoughts at sort of a surface level, if you will. And then we have a fun wish list we're going to go through. But first, we need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of Fire and Water Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. What'd you bring, Rob?
I'm going to take the week off from suggesting the Art of Ramona Fraiden book and plug Batman, the Silver Age Newspaper Comics Hardcover Volume 2, 1968 to 1969. It's from IDW, and it, like the title suggests, it reprints a whole bunch of strips from the Batman late 1960s newspaper strip. And the reason, and it's written by Whitney Ellsworth, drawn by Joe Giella and Al Plastino. The reason I am mentioning this is because, by the way, it's the dailies and the Sundays, which is really cool.
Hmm.
But the reason I'm mentioning this is because during this run of Batman newspaper strips, Aquaman makes a guest appearance.
Oh, no way.
Yes, in an extended sequence. I actually ran these strips on the Aquaman Shrine way back when, because I didn't know that. Somebody hipped me to it. I never read this. I read the 40 strip, but I've never read the 60s one, and because it was mostly pretty much unavailable. But here it's in hardcover form. IDW does these beautiful, hardcover newspaper collections. It's 256 pages. Partial color, I guess, because the Sundays are in color and the rest of the strips are in black and white. The normal price is $49.99, but in-stock trades price is $32.49. You save 35% off. And the last thing I will say about this is the first appearance of Aquaman in this run of strips, as Batman uses a radio to call him for help, it features a panel of Aquaman giving a fish a hypodermic needle. They don't explain why. He's just doing it, which I find incredibly charming.
Like injecting the fish or handing him the needle?
No, like injecting the fish with something. I don't know if the fish was sick or whatever he's doing, but it's Aquaman like holding a fish with a hypo. I'm like, what? What? What is that? But I love it.
That is very interesting. Now, I saw that you picked this thing, but I didn't realize you were picking it because of Aquaman. I figured it was like kind of the theme of the show, which is the movie TV tie-in sort of thing, because the Batman strips around 1968, 69, would have leaned kind of heavily on the TV show material, I would think.
I did not. They don't. And I did not even really make that connection. It really was just I looked at what was available for Aquaman and I was like, you know what? I've recommended like almost all of these. Let me find something a little different. And then bang, that book is, and it's really fun. I mean, I'm just a fan of great newspaper strips. And again, as I mentioned, these IDW collections, they do such a nice job. Like they really clean them up and have they get like a special intro and they give you the history of the strips. And the strips are fun. They're not as fun as the 40s one. I will say the 40s is like to me cannot be topped, but they are really fun. And they are a relatively unheralded corner of the Batman universe. I think a lot of people,
that's true,
Don't know it even was even a thing.
I am one of those people that did not know that Batman had I mean, it makes sense the minute you say it, but I didn't know he had a comic strip. Yep. Interesting. Well, I did pick an Aquaman book, specifically one that I feel is like a one that needs a light shined on it, which is Aquaman Sword of Atlantis trade paperback book one. For those of you that just rolled your eyes when I said Sword of Atlantis, shame on you. Shame, shame, shame. This comes from I don't remember when this was actually. Was this about 2005? It was actually. Yeah.
When
these came out. And what they did was DC had this 1 year later thing they were doing, but they jumped Aquaman forward 1 year and completely changed the whole landscape of the book. Kurt Busiek came on the book with Jackson Geiss, and it was a whole different feel. They basically turned Aquaman into a sword and sorcery underwater comic. And at the time, I didn't give it a chance. I dismissed it, but along with most readers, right away and said, well, this isn't my Aquaman. This isn't what I wanted to read. And I still read it every month, but I didn't like it. And then I came back to it later and just reevaluated it. And I'm like, dang, this is actually really entertaining. Again, if you look at it as a sword and sorcery thing, knowing full well that, Aquaman's not really in the story. It's a replacement Aquaman, potentially his son. There's a story there I won't reveal. They call him Joseph and stuff. But if you don't think of it as like, this is Aquaman from now on, you just go, this was a microcosm in time. It's a lot of fun to read. I really enjoyed this. So this collects Aquaman Sword of Atlantis issue 40 through something. I guess my notes got messed up here. Anyways, the first half of the Sword of Atlantis storyline is what it is. And it's 464 pages, so that's a ton of comic, full color, soft cover. Normally goes for $39.99, but now you can get it for 65% off. It's only $13.99 for 464 pages. You know Kurt Busiek's a great writer. You know Jackson Geiss is a great artist. As long as you can accept the sword and sorcery thing going in, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of interesting ideas in these comics. I really enjoyed them. Did you ever get a chance to reevaluate it, or did you just do your initial decision on it yourself?
I got it at the time. Of course I did. And I will admit, I didn't love it because you just talked about it. It was like, this is not my Aquaman. Like, the Aquaman that I grew up with is in the book. I won't get into how he's in the book, but he is in the book. But it was not the one I liked. And so when it was canceled, I was like, well, all right, no great loss. But I then reread it, and like a lot of things, I'm like, no, this is actually really pretty good as its own separate thing.
Yeah, and that's the way to think about it. And it was hard, too, because it was coming off the Sub Diego stuff, which we all love so much.
Yep.
But anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so folks, so check these out. Go out to InStockTrades.com and choose either these or any other collected edition, and support the show by supporting our sponsor. And then, folks, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support, because, you know, running the Fire and Water Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched the Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying shows on the network, the best way to support this show or the network itself is by visiting patreon.com/FW podcast. And while you're there, please consider supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network. In a certain tiers, you get mentioned on your show of choice, just like these people who are some of the most patient people on earth to wait to hear their names on this show, which only comes out about once a year. So thank you to these folks who support the Aquaman and Firestorm podcast. Our thanks go to
Philip Rutledge, who was only 12 when he first supported the network, Gord Tolton, Jason Pope, and David Ace Gutierrez.
Again, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. All right, so folks, we are going to take a quick podcast promo break. And when we come back, we are going to jump into Aquaman Through Fire and Water, as unbelievable as that is, talk about Aquaman 2, and then talk a little bit about a wish list of ours.
Celebrating the tradition of apes in comics, for 2024, Gorilla Grodd has transformed JL May into JL April, exploring a phylum of amazing apes, such as
Batman Annual number 23,
Wonder Woman number 170,
Kong on the Planet of the Apes, issue 1,
Angel and the Ape,
The Helmet of Fate, Detective Chimp,
Showcase number 77,
JLA versus Godzilla versus Kong,
Swamp Thing volume 2, annual 3,
Kong Gorilla, issues 1 through 4,
with a host of podcast all-stars like
The Bat Pod,
Resurrections, an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast,
Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast,
Dolph of Flanga,
The Quarterbin podcast,
Coffee and Comic,
Once Upon a Geek,
Fanholes podcast,
Married with Content with John and Maggie,
Campus Comics cast,
and many more. Look for the hashtag JLApril2024 on social media, the podcast crossover event that doesn't monkey around.
JLApril.
Monkey around, really?
Hello, how are you? This is Sean Merrick from the podcast Worst Collection Ever, where myself and my wife, Jennifer Stansfield Merrick, talk about the weird, the funny, and absolutely insane comic books in our comic book collection. Are they good? Probably not. But we're going to have fun anyways. We took a little break, but now we're back with brand new episodes, so please check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, even check us out on YouTube, Angry Hero 79. You can subscribe, you can review, you can rate on there, and we'd love to hear from you. So check you then.
And now, Aquaman Through Fire and Water. Yes, America, you're welcome. So this is a 22-page prequel comic, all digital, to tie in with the movie. Again, you buy the movie and you got it, or if you're on DC Infinite, you get a hold of it. It was released January 23rd in 2024. Writer is Ethan Sachs. Artist is Tom Derenick. Colorist is Hi-Fi. Letter is Josh Reed. Cover artist, I don't know, I'm going to try this, Fico Osio?
Could be.
Sure. Okay. Editor is Michael McAllister, and Aquaman creators get credited, Mort Weisinger and Paul Norris.
Now, I noticed for many years, they took Mort Weisinger off, and now he's back.
Oh.
For a little while, it was just Paul Norris, and I wondered why that was, and I always assumed it's because Mort Weisinger was an employee for DC when he created Aquaman, and maybe that created, but now I notice he's back on the creative credit, which he deserves, because he co-created the character.
He did co-create it. Maybe he got taken off because he was a complete a-hole, from what I
know. Well, if that's the reason.
Sure, there's a lot of people that are going to get credit for stuff, including you and me. But
let's not go down that road.
Should not throw stones from your glass house. Anyway, rather than writing a recap of the comic, the promotional blurb is actually pretty good. And so we're going to use that, and then we're just going to discuss it. So here is the promotional blurb for this comic. A catastrophic explosion has caused a deep-sea oil drilling platform to start sinking towards the bottom of the sea and unleashing a massive oil spill. Aquaman must race to the scene to rescue the workers trapped inside. Once on the scene, Aquaman comes face-to-face with his arch-nemesis, Black Manta. Can Aquaman defeat Black Manta before the drilling platform explodes? So that's the blurb. And in a shocking turn of events, Aquaman does in fact defeat Black Manta. I know, we're surprised too. So that's the blurb, and now we'll just get into it here. So what'd you think of this thing, man?
Okay, well, first of all, I noticed there's a one on the cover, which indicates there might be a two, which is, I don't know, what, nah. You know?
They would just do another number one if they're doing
it. I guess yeah. So, yeah. I mean, but I just wondered why you'd number it at all, if it's just like a, you know, a one-off giveaway. Like, you just call it Aquaman Through Fire and Water. Okay, so I watched, I read the comic, and... You know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm glad this exists. I think it's super cool that they did, you know, even did this like a tie-in comic. Again, I think they should do more efforts to remind people where these things come from. It, from what we understand, most people still don't care. But nevertheless, I'm glad that this exists. I did enjoy reading it. It did read to me like the Aquaman comics from about 10 years ago, like when Paul Pelletier was drawing it, and Tom Derenick's work kind of reminds me of that little bit. It is a very basic Aquaman story. And so when you know that it is what it was made for, which is to presumably read for people who haven't read an Aquaman comic, it's perfectly fine because it gives you the main character, Mira, the setting, Black Manta, their conflicts with one another. It's, you know, if you're someone like me who's read a 4 billion Aquaman comics, you've read this comic 3,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
But as a giveaway to a maybe new audience, it was perfectly fine.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's imagine, and you may not agree with this, but remember the Superpowers action figures, right? And they had the little mini comic inside.
Yes.
And it was designed for kids, right? You know, and it's like that on steroids. It's completely disposable. The story, like, honestly, I read it and I forgot about it a week later. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's not like it was terrible. It's just, like you said, we've read this Aquaman story 3,000 times. Okay, there's somebody in trouble in the sea. Aquaman and Mera have to go help them. Surface dwellers, and Black Manta is being a dick. You know, I mean, that's what it is. And that's okay. Because, like you said, anybody who's never read a comic, this is probably a fun little thing. So I dig these little tie-ins. And I don't know why. I have a strong attraction to them. Because DC does these a lot. They'll do... Not necessarily in this format where it came with a DVD, but like when the Titans TV show was on, DC would publish these like mini series. They might be only 4 issues, maybe 6 issues, whatever. And it would be the Titans, and it would take place in the Titans comic continuity, kind of. But it was clearly targeted at the TV show. Like all the characters involved were clearly the characters that are appearing on TV. And it was really done to tie in with that. And I love those for some reason. I read them all because they're bottle stories. You don't need to know what's going on in issue 462 to understand what's happening. You don't have to reference back to the origin of this character. You just read it. It's self-contained. You go on with your day and you have a good time. So I have a love for these types of tie-in books. And I think this one's a lot of fun. I got a lot of like nitpicky details here and there, but I think they kind of captured Jason Momoa's look. I feel like they captured his voice a little bit. Not, you know, a little bit. I think Mera is more like the comic version of Mera, would you say?
Yeah, I'll agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, all right, so this is where I start getting nitpicky, all right? So the thing opens, he's having a beer with his dad, which is clearly a movie point, because Aquaman's dad's not alive in the comics, if I remember right, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he's having a beer with his dad, and they hear this big rumble. And like, uh-oh, what was that? Nothing good. That beer's going to have to wait. Then you flip the page and you see this oil rig exploding. But when you stop and think about it, they're in Maine and the oil rig's in Florida. That must have been one hell of an explosion. It's just somebody's geography. Like, I wonder if when the writer wrote this, maybe he didn't know that Aquaman lives in Maine. Maybe he didn't realize that. I don't know. But that two things did not calculate together for me.
That explosion had to be really loud for Ryan Daly.
Right, exactly. Oh, man. And I do like, because I rewatched the movie recently, or most of it, and I do like that they try to pick up certain things. Like, in the film, they try to make a point of environmental climate awareness issues in the film. And there's more of that here in the story. Like, you know, there's a guy littering in the ocean, and Mara's pissed off about it. You know, there's the oil destroying the sea, and Mara's pissed off about it. So they did try and bring some of those environmental issues into there. You do see Arthur Jr. in the artwork. It's strange they don't mention him in the text, but you do see Arthur Jr. in the imagery. So they're trying to tie in there. There is another nitpicky thing I found too. So, like, you know, in here, Aquaman's facing off against who?
Black Manta.
Right. He's in the suit just like he always is, right? But in the movie, when you watch Aquaman 2, the whole beginning of the movie is Black Manta does not have a working power suit. That's what's driving his search for Atlantean tech.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is in fact a prequel comic, that's a big that doesn't work, is that Black Manta can't be running around in a suit because that's kind of the whole point of the movie. So that doesn't quite work. But again, I'm playing nitpicky. It's just a fun read. I think the artist did a nice job. It's, you know, the characters, I can see what's going on. I never have a problem telling what's happening with the action. You know, he varies up the panel design. It flows nicely. So I'm struggling because I don't want to say it's a meaningless comic, but it kind of is. But that's okay. It serves its function, which is to give you a little bite-sized story about Aquaman for newbies.
Yeah, I mean, DC's been, and Marvel too, virtually all the companies have been doing these kinds of comics since comics even started. So This is just one of those kinds of thing. I mean, good Lord, in the 40s, they made Superman comics just for department stores where, like, Superman interacted with, like, the mascot of the department store. I mean, that's, you know, so I did notice a couple things there. First of all, I mean, obviously he looks like Jason Momoa as opposed to what we think of how Aquaman looks in the comic. Outside of the line about the beer, He really doesn't act that much like the Momoa Aquaman. Like, the dialogue, I think, could mostly be transposed to the comic book Aquaman, and it wouldn't be a big difference. Like, there just isn't a lot of, like, my man and all that stuff. You know, he doesn't really do a lot of that. So, yeah, it looks like Momoa, but it really is, to me, mostly just the Aquaman that we know. I did find it interesting that Mira takes such a large part in this story when she is completely sidelined in the movie. And we'll talk about that shortly.
I disagree, but okay.
What do you mean? What part do you disagree
on the movie part? Yeah, I don't think she was sidelined. I don't think she's sidelined nearly as much as we feel like she was.
That came from
my rewatch. But anyway,
okay,
go ahead.
All right, we'll get to that. Anyway. In the comic, it's Aquaman and it's an Aquaman and Mira adventure.
Yeah,
and I would say the movie is an Aquaman adventure. Actually, it's Aquaman and Ocean Master adventure. But okay, we'll talk about that. But I'm just saying Mira has a bigger part here than she really got to play in the movie, which is just sort of interesting. But yeah, I mean, we don't mean to, like, damn it with faint praise, especially since, you know, we're bringing the show back out of mothballs just to talk about it, and then the two of us are kind of like, yeah, you know, but it's fine. It's fine. Like, it's the other way to put it. Like, there's nothing I can point to. I'm like, well, this wasn't any good. It's just, okay, yeah. But, you know, it's a great Aquaman comic to give to a kid who, if kids even still read comics, that have not read an Aquaman comic, this is a good book to give them because obviously it looks like Momoa. And so you can go, oh, okay, yeah, that's the guy. All right, he's with his dad. And like, oh, okay, great, cool. So, you know, yeah, I probably should stop saying this. It's great that it exists.
Yeah. And if you're a DC Infinite user or you're a subscriber, you have it already for free. And I recommend you read it. You're not wasting your time. It's not like you're going to read and go, well, that's, you know, 10 minutes of my life I'll never get back. No, it's a fun little adventure. You know what? Go for it. It's fun. There's some nice art. I love the oil rig on fire and sinking. And there's a scary part where the guys are going down and the oil riggers guys are like, they seal themselves inside the rig knowing that it's going to take a miracle to save them. You know, they know they might die. So, I mean, there's, there's some moments of real tension here, and Mara's hot, and there's fish doing stuff, and it's a fun read. And Black Manta looks great. I love what he looks like. Mm-hmm. So you're not wasting your time reading it, but you're also not going to walk away and go, I get Aquaman now. So
no.
That's the long and short of it, folks. It's worth your time. It's not the greatest thing I've ever read, but that's okay. It served its purpose admirably.
Absolutely. I wish they had done this for every comic. I wish they did this for every single licensed property.
Yeah.
That they do, like a Doom Patrol giveaway comic and a Swamp Thing giveaway comic. And man, hopefully they'll do something for Superman next year giveaway comic.
Right.
They should do this every single time.
Yeah. And they should do it with the TV shows too. When Harley Quinn comes back for a new season, they should do something like this, or, you know, something to keep
well,
it.
That you couldn't give to kids.
Well, true. But you can put it on the DVD and adults could watch it, or, you know, yeah. Adults could read it or download it or whatever. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So that is Aquaman through Fire and Water. I will say a lot less firestorm than I was expecting in the comic, but, you know, there is a lot of fire, just not so much storm. So anyway. All right. So now we're going to move to a very brief surface level discussion, not deep, on Aquaman, the Lost Kingdom. Figure why not? It's a good time. This ties into the movie. We haven't really talked about it on the show. We kind of have an Aquaman podcast. We probably should. So Rob, I'm going to go on a limb and say, this is your Oscar pick for 2020.
Yes. Yeah. It was totally Rob. The best picture. God, Oppenheimer, you hack. I will admit, I will admit on air about being wrong about something in the private Fire and Water chat, network chat that we are a part of. I have been saying for years, this movie was never going to get made.
I think never you said it on the air, actually.
Maybe I was that much of a dumbass. That's certainly possible. but I thought for no way would this get made, simply because at the time, Momoa had kind of thrown in his lot with Ray Fisher during that whole contretemps against Joss Whedon. And I thought, well, he's really cutting his own throat because Joss Whedon is, you know, in good at Warner Brothers. Well, I didn't know what that was going to end up being. But at the time, it certainly, I mean, like Ray Fisher has been in other things, but he kind of did sink his own career in a lot of ways. He's never going to be Cyborg again because he really kind of went after the hand that fed him, both Joss Whedon and Warner Brothers. And when Momoa kind of threw in a little bit with Ray Fisher, I thought, well, that's it. That's, you know, and we liked Aquaman, the movie, right? We reviewed it on the show and I did like it, but yes, it made $1 billion. It was the most successful. It's still, I think, the most successful DCU movie. I think Joker is like just behind it, but it's still Aquaman, which is amazing to say. But I think it was one of those movies that makes a ton of money and then Hollywood is like, oh, everyone wants a sequel. And I think most people didn't. I think most people watched that movie, liked it, and forgot about it. And it didn't generate the need. It's not like Dune Part 2, where people were like, oh my God, I love Dune Part 1. Give me more Dune. Well, here you go. Here's more Dune. Great. And you see the audience is lining up to go see Dune Part 2. I think the audience was kind of like, I don't really want another Aquaman movie. I'm going to guess you're going to make it, you know? And I just thought all those. And then, of course, the forces going of that they were going to revamp the DCU entirely.
Right. Exactly.
And I just thought, okay, this thing has so many things going against it that they're just going to cancel it. Right. They'll just, and they did not. I was completely wrong. And it ends up being, ironically, the last movie of the DC universe before they flip the script and completely start over. So I was completely wrong about that.
And it went back for reshoot and reshoot and reshoot.
Yes, a lot of problems. Yes.
Then the whole Amber Heard publicized trial.
On top of it, there was that too.
So many things stacked against it that I even got to the point where I started to wonder if it wasn't ever going to be released, you know, but if they're going to release The Flash, I guess they'll release anything. So Batgirl.
Oh boy. So that right out of the gate, I'll say I was wrong about that. I watched the movie. Kelly and I took her nephews to see it, and they are 12 and 10 and they thoroughly enjoyed it. My problem with this movie is a similar problem I've had to a bunch of the Marvel movies and even like something like Morbius, where there is not anything in the movie that I can really point to and say, this was bad, this was wrong, they shouldn't have done this, it's wrong. but it at the same time, it is a movie that leaves my brain 30 seconds after I saw it. Right. Mm-hmm. I literally never thought about this movie again after I left the theater. And not all movies need to do that. You know, some movies are just meant to entertain you for the length that you see them. They're meant to be theater experiences, and they're not, you know, not everything is meant to be Citizen Kane or Jaws or whatever classic movie you want to, Psycho, whatever classic movie you want to compare it to. Some
House,
movies are
House to the Second Story.
House to the Second Story, you know, whatever. So that isn't necessarily a criticism, but I feel that these movies are just so loud, so overstuffed, so kind of formula that they just are like, they're just wallpaper. And even with something like this, where I am as invested as I can be because it's this universe that I love so much, it's Aquaman, it just left my – I walked out of the theater and it, you know, I was like – it was almost like I didn't even see it because I had so little reaction to it. So that was sort of how I felt about it.
I have some similarities in – I felt the same way. Like I remember watching it and in one of our chats I said, you know, I probably won't remember this movie in a week. And sure enough, a week later, I didn't remember anything about the movie other than a fact that I saw it. But I would say my overall grade is probably simply indifferent. I don't love it. I don't hate it. I'll rattle off some pros and cons, and that may show you why I'm in the middle. The pros are that it's a big blockbuster action movie. The action's great. If you want to see things blow up and you want to see people fight each other, it's great. It's awesome for that. It makes a great theater experience. The special effects look great. You know, DC, unfortunately, has had some really ropey special effects in some of their movies. Not in this one. This everything looked fantastic in this one. There's some nice nods to Aquaman lore. You know, I guess spoilers at this point. I don't feel bad about that. You know, you get Kordak from the Peter David run. You get Topo in there. You get the camo suit. You know, are they exactly one-to-one to the comic? No. But you get some of those nice nods in there. I would say Patrick Wilson was very good in the movie. He did a really good job. He wasn't playing Ocean Master, but as a character to watch on the screen, Patrick Wilson was really engaging and interesting. I would also say the plot was just fine, where Black Manta is poisoning the atmosphere and the hero's got to stop him and the baby's in jeopardy. The plot's fine. Now the cons come in here. So the cons are that the script was really bad. Like, the dialogue is completely clumsy and corny, like George Lucas level bad. There's lines, because I just tried to rewatch it recently, where like Jason Momoa always saying, so like, I cannot wait for you to see all the majestic creatures of this beautiful planet. I'm like, nobody effing speaks like that. I'm sorry. There's a whole bunch of clunky delivery of lines, and then there's so much exposition in the movie where some character is talking and explaining some complicated piece of history, and you're just watching visuals of, you know, the evil kingdom being developed or what the Black Man is doing, or, you know, literally once you know it's there, it's all you can see is exposition of them describing stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm seeing it. Why do you need to tell me what it is? And that's not great. And then I would say Jason Momoa and several of the other actors were pretty mediocre. I didn't believe Momoa's delivery of the lines. Amber Heard felt like she was checked out. But again, Patrick Wilson was great. Oh, the guy, I can't remember his name. Shoot, I meant to write it down. The guy who played Black Manta, he was very good also. He felt, you know, unhinged. He felt threatening. He was intense. I liked him in it. So when you take the positives that I mentioned, which was a long list there, and you take those negatives, which are significant in my opinion, it is overall fun, but extremely disposable is how I feel about the movie. That's where I landed on that thing.
I agree with all of that. I mean, look, this version of Aquaman, the Jason Momoa version of Aquaman, I think we probably even talked about this when we reviewed the movie, or maybe when we did the audio commentary episode where we did the talk about the movie, is that I don't like, this is not a version of the character that I have any interest in. Mm-hmm. This bro version of Aquaman. And I used to think it was because it's not my Aquaman, but that's not really accurate, because I was perfectly happy with the Brave and the Bold animated version of Aquaman. And that's a very different version of the Aquaman that I was familiar with. You know, that's actually closer to the Momoa version, but it's more of like the Brian Blessed from Flash Gordon kind of Aquaman, or the Golden Age stories Aquaman. That's a very different Aquaman. And I'm okay with all those. And I was fine with the new 52 version of Aquaman, which is a slightly different version of the one I grew up with. So it's not that it's not exactly my Aquaman. It's just, this is not a character, and the way he is played by Jason Momoa is of any interest to me. And he never says anything interesting. He never has any interesting thoughts or observations. He is just one. And this is the script. This isn't so much Momoa, because he's got to play what they give him. Mm-hmm. But he's just the same guy from the whole movie. It's just, you know, it's just that, you know, and it's like the clever, like it's, you know, like, oh shit. Like he's just that kind of Aquaman, you know, and you're just like, this just is not interesting to me. Now, the other thing too is like, I don't think the world was clamoring for Ocean Master to come back. I don't particularly think of them as like a great buddy duo.
Right.
And yet the movie, he spends most of the time running around Skull Island, which being chased with Orm. And I'm like, why is this the movie? I don't guess that. And well, then
I just want to mention about what you said about Momoa and tying into this, the plot here too, is like one of the things that made the first movie work was Momoa had a journey, Aquaman had a journey in that movie where he started off as dude bro. And by the end, he was still dude bro, but he was a better person. He was more about standing up for everyone, doing what was right. You saw him go through a learning process and be caring about Atlantis. So he had a journey. This movie, he doesn't really have a journey. No. You know, he's already the dad. And by the end, he's still just the dad, is what the almost single dad for the most part, is kind of what he is.
Yeah. And look, I'm not going to get bogged down in the minutia of the universe because none of it makes any sense anymore. And you can't get bothered by it. It doesn't make any sense, though, I will say, at the ending scene, which A, lifted from the Iron Man movie. But that, like, he's like, I am Aquaman. You're like, people know who you are. You were in the Justice League movie. Like, what? Like, what is, like, I don't understand. Why is he being introduced to the world when he's been in like four movies already? And then the other thing is, like, you know, they're facing this incredible threat. And he's like, the only one that can help me is Ocean Master. Really? I don't know. Call Superman. Call Wonder Woman. Maybe one of those people. Maybe they get Wonder Woman can show up for funerals at the end of the second Shazam movie, but you can't show up. Now, I know why they can't have Superman in the movie. But still, once you've introduced these characters to your world, and then he's like, oh, you know what really is going to help me save the world? My brother Ocean Master. Like, what? You know? So, and then, okay, one last thing. I am not anti-CGI. That's just easy to say, oh, everything should be practical effects. Well, that's not really practical in some cases. But certain directors, I think, know how to present digital effects in a way that it is not just visual and audio slop. And it is just, instead of, it's kind of like what we used to talk about this when we review comics in the 90s, where like once they realized in the like mid to late 90s that they could do digital coloring, it was like, oh, I could paint the Flash's cowl red, or I could stick in 19 tones because I can. And you're like, well, then but more is not necessarily better here. And I think James Wan in this case just overload you with just stuff. And not too long after I saw Aquaman, I went and saw Godzilla Minus One. Have you seen that movie?
I haven't, but I know you're where okay. I've read your some thoughts on that, right. So I know where you're going.
I'm not a Godzilla guy, right? I don't really care about Godzilla movies, but everyone said if you're gonna see it in the theater because it has impact. And so I went and saw it. And that movie is all digital effects. Godzilla is obviously a digital effect. It's not a kind of rubber suit. But in that movie, and in the stuff where Godzilla attacks boats and attacks cities, he has weight. He has heft. It feels real. And so therefore, when things happen, when he destroys a building or he sets somebody on fire, it has some emotional resonance, even though I know it's not real. It's ones and zeros. But that effects team, they were nominated for an Oscar, by the way. Actually, by the time everybody's listening to this, the Oscars are tonight. If you're listening to this on Sunday, we'll know whether they win or not. But those effects have heft to them, emotional and visual heft. And it gives the movie a sense of realism and purpose. And to me, this movie, it's just, for 2 hours straight of just unrelenting, and to the point where it, to me, you start to numb out. It just gets like, okay, all right, you've shown me 40 million things, and now I'm going to look at 40 more million things. Okay. You know, like you just get numb to it. And so it's just, it made me a little sad because I think it's almost guaranteed that Aquaman, if he comes back in the new DCU, it will be a very long time. I don't think they're going to give him another run for quite a while. He has, as far as I know, I've not been following this, super closely, but I don't think James Gunn has mentioned Aquaman as part of his plan in any way. I mean, he's talking about the Creature Commandos and the Authority and Metamorpho, but I don't think Aquaman has ever once been mentioned. So I think that Aquaman, if he ever does come back in a live action form, it's going to be for quite a while. And so it made me a little sad that it's like, oh, well, this is, you know, the cinematic Aquaman goes out like this, just kind of like with a whimper. And it didn't make that much money. It did okay, but it didn't make $1 billion because, like I said, I think the audience was like, I saw the first one, meh, you know? And then one other data point, which is not.
Wait. Before you leave that point, I just want to say, you know, it's not just Aquaman, though. I mean, it's like Shazam. It's Black Adam. It's all these characters, probably The Flash, I don't know for sure, but yeah, all these characters that got their shot during the Snyder verse, if you will, they bring shelved, which makes sense. I mean, it does. Sure. You know, it's not that Aquaman failed and that's why he's getting shelved. It's just he had his chance and now they're going to try and do other stuff. Of course, Superman and Batman will be there, probably Wonder Woman as well. But beyond those three tent poles, the rest of it's going to be new stuff. And that's probably okay.
Yeah. So yeah, just the last thing I wanted to mention, and this, I just, again, this is one anecdote does not make it, you know, applicable, scalable for everybody's experience. But I just do notice these things. There is a there's a bookstore chain in Delaware that we frequent sometimes called Second and Charles.
Woohoo!
And are you familiar with this?
Oh, yeah. We got those in Florida, too.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Well, yep. I'll be able to visit them when I go to Florida. But you know, they sell used movies. You could go and you can sell your old movies and they will take them. They give you some return rate.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been there enough times that I start to notice, what movies do they have 50 copies of? Right?
Aquaman.
Right. And yeah, well, exactly. And I noticed that, like, okay, there's 30 copies of Age of Ultron and like one copy of Endgame.
Mm.
Okay. But yes, I did notice one time there were the last time I looked and I was paying attention to these things, there was quite literally a shelf full of Aquaman on Blu-ray and DVD. And that told me everybody bought it, maybe because they hadn't seen the theater, and then they got it and they went, meh, you know, and they sold it. They sold it back. Now, maybe it's because it's available on Max or whatever, but that just, I started like making it an unofficial thing where I was sort of tallying which blockbusters did people have buyer's remorse on? And, you know, you could see it like, oh, nobody, there's only one copy of The Matrix, but there's 10 copies of The Matrix sequels. That right. tells me that people didn't like. And so I thought that about Aquaman, and that made me think, is there really an audience for another one of these? And the answer was no, not really.
I've always kind of thought part of the reason it made $1 billion is like there just wasn't anything else good in the theater at that time, I think, other than Bumblebee. Like, you know, it happened to be over the Christmas time and it just came at the right moment. And I think that's part of the reason it did so well the first time. It just was the right thing at the right time.
Yes, Momoa was hot. He was coming off of Game of Thrones. Like, yeah, there was a lot of great things all at once.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot to eat his lunch. You know, this time there was a lot of good movies out. So now a couple other things. As a comics nerd, I was disappointed in the camo suit. You know, it's an invisibility suit for first of all, and it's just blue, which was disappointing. I like that they put it in there as clearly it's a nod to the Craig Hamilton suit.
Yep.
But it never looked as good. Like the way Craig Hamilton drew it, it's amazing, right? It never looked that good with anyone else in any other form. The action figure looks like an ice skater. So I get why they didn't make it look that way in the movie, but it just makes me sad because that's what I want. You know, I want to see Craig Hamilton's costume in real life and it's never going to work. I guess some more pros and cons real quick. This comes from me trying to rewatch it, which by the way, okay, in complete full disclosure, I didn't finish my rewatch because I tried to watch it over two different nights and fell asleep a total of three times watching this movie, which is not a good sign. Not a good sign. And sometimes if I fall asleep, my wife will keep watching. She did not. She said, just turn that off now. But it just, I said the plot was fine, but at the same time, because there wasn't a journey for Arthur or anyone else, it did feel kind of like a TV story. Like it felt like a really small story. Even though it's epic in scale, it didn't feel important enough to merit a giant movie. It felt like what you'd get at like a TV season finale sort of thing or something like that. But some positives are the soundtrack was great. Again, a lot of it's reusing the previous music, but it's strong. There's parts where you hear that either Black Manta's theme or Aquaman's theme, and you kind of get excited, like, hell yeah, because it's great music. And then the movie, well, it wasn't put together. It's like a cake that was baked wrong. Like they used all the right ingredients, right? They had family as a core element of the story. They had parenting as a core part of the story. Arthur as a parent, and then Arthur's own dad, and Manta as a son, and brothers, Aquaman and Orm. So the family's there, front and center. They've got him standing by his spouse, which we still got to talk about Amber Heard. There's the environmental pollution concerns. So all those are great themes. It just didn't get mixed well enough. Now, my argument about Amber Heard, in my memory, too, right? She's taken right out of the movie. That's not actually what happens. Like, you don't see her for like the first 10 or 15 minutes. And I think that's intentional because they want to sneak it in there and surprise you. They don't want you to like immediately think about her with everything that happened. But she's there helping him raise the baby. She's there helping him. She's helping defend Atlantis with Aquaman's mom. Now, she takes a shot, like a blast, and gets hurt. And that's when people think, oh, they took her out of the show. She's only out for like 30 minutes. Then she's back in it through the whole final fight. She's there with him to the end. I was convinced going in that she was going to die in the first 5 minutes of the movie, and that
I
was
thought
it.
so. I thought so too. I
Yeah.
really
So
did.
my argument is no, she's actually in a good amount of the movie. And Aquaman, even at one point when she gets injured, she's like, you stay away from my wife or something. Like he stands up for her. And I almost felt like maybe are the Warner Brothers guys trying to stand by Amber a little bit in this, maybe? Because she's in it a heck of a lot more than I would have thought. And
I
again,
think it
she's there
was
all the way
too
to the
late.
end.
I think it was too late for them to do anything. They buried her in the trailer.
Yes, she
She's in, I
literally got
think
a
she's
clip.
in 3 seconds in the trailer. And I
No,
thought,
she's in half a second.
But I think it was probably too late to chip. But yeah, she's in the movie more than I would have expected. But she gets a lot of screen time, but she doesn't like her and Aquaman have virtually no scenes together, and they have no. And the other thing is, look, and this is just you discover these things when you cast it. Momoa and Amber Heard have as much chemistry as Johnny Depp and Amber Heard did during the trial. I mean, they just have absolutely no, there's just, we wanted to, I'll tell you this with this discussion Shag and I had off air, folks, is that we were like, we're going to bring Fire and Water back. We don't want to be negative. We want it to be kind of a fun thing. And then we were like, but we can't not talk about the Aquaman movie. Because there's an Aquaman movie, but at the
Right.
same time, it was like, yeah, but so like I'm trying my best to not be so down on it, but I can't help it. Like I said, I didn't even there wasn't even a part about it that I was actively like, oh, I don't like this part. It just evaporated out of my brain. It
Yeah.
really did. It really did. So.
So let's wrap this part up because we are getting hovering the negativeness around the drain here. The bottom line is it's fine. It's not great. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen, that's for sure. I've seen a lot of worse
What a
superhero
review.
movies. But it's very forgettable. And but it's Aquaman, it exists, and you know what? There's some kid out there that is going to inspire them 10 years from now, 15 years from now, to go back and buy an, I don't know, an Aquaman pencil case or something and do something amazing with that passion. And that's awesome because it's going to be in their brain from being a kid and it's going to carry through into their adulthood and they'll have arrested development just like us. And I'm thrilled that that's going to happen for somebody.
All right. Well, that leads to the perfect end story I have for my segment here is that, as I mentioned, we took Kelly's nephews to see the movie. And, at the end, so the theater was selling Aquaman and Black Manta shaped popcorn tins that you
Oh,
could
okay.
buy, right? And they're like these, I mean, you know what a popcorn tin is, everybody. It was a big metal tin. And one of them is like, they kind of look like, I don't know, maybe not Funko versions, but like I guess maybe like the Squiggle Knots or something. Like they look like game versions of the, they're squat and they're cartoony, and they're metal tins. And we were leaving the theater, and Kelly, who denies her nephews nothing, says one of them suggested that they wanted one of the tins, And since there's two of them, we said, well, we'll each get you one. Which one do you want? And we want the other one. One wants Blank Manta. The other one wants Aquaman. Okay, great. So they wander off and I get back in line and I say, yeah, can I get two of the, can I get the Aquaman and Black Manta popcorn tins? Great. Young woman runs and grabs them, hands them to me. She rings them up and she says, that will be $68.
No, wait, okay, hold on a minute. So when you say popcorn tin, is it just a regular bucket size, or is it like physically shaped like Aquaman?
No, it's basically it's round.
Okay.
And it's not like it's sculpted to look like an action figure. It's just basically a metal tin.
It's a generic cylinder that they paint outside.
But yes, $68. And I just smiled at the effrontery of the movie theater for charging, or whoever decides, you know, I know the theater, the Warner Brothers has probably got some cut of that or whatever, but I just slid my card over because it was like, well, you got me. Okay.
Wow.
And so we gave them their popcorn tins and they were very happy with them. And like you said, maybe they will each keep them and it will inspire a love of the character that will stretch into their adulthoods, and I'll be able to bore them incessantly with all my knowledge of Aquaman. You know, there was an Earth 2 version, guys. But yes, $68 for two empty popcorn tins. That is late stage capitalism.
They didn't even fill it with popcorn.
Well, no, I didn't want it. Because then it would get all greasy and dirty. We already had popcorn. That was on top of the snacks that we got them going into the movie.
See, if I'm paying $68 for something, I better get like a little prize out of this.
Yeah, so between the tickets, the concessions, and then the popcorn tins, I think we probably dropped $200 total on this movie.
Well, that's a couple years worth of collecting Aquaman comics that you haven't had to do. So I guess it's an even trade out.
I'm just saying, everybody, patreon.com/FW podcast.
Oh, my Lord. That is not what it goes to. Anyway. But, you know, I'm sorry. I don't think they even charged that for the Blue Beetle bug ship popcorn container you could buy. When the Blue Beetle movie came out, you could actually get a popcorn tin shaped like Blue Beetle's bug. And I don't think they even charged that.
But, I don't know whether it's just this theater in the area that it's in that really has exorbitant prices. Cause we took them a year ago to see Shazam Fury of the Gods. And I think four tickets for that movie on like a Saturday afternoon was like $75. I mean, just absolutely outrageous prices. And so now I've handed Warner Brothers a lot of my money in the last year to see a lot of mediocre movies.
Clearly. Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about something happy. So, Rob, yes. Why don't you introduce this next segment? This is an idea you said you had to, and knowing that we were going to get a little negative, to end the show on a positive note.
Exactly. That was exactly why I came up with it. I realized that we're bringing Fire and Water, the show, back after, what, a year, 2 years from the last one that we did?
I think it's been a year, but I mean, it's probably going to be a year again, folks. Don't get too excited.
Probably, yeah. And I didn't want us to end on a down because we're kind of relatively neutral, slightly positive on the comic. I would say neutral, slightly negative on the movie. And I wanted to end on something on a more positive note. So one of the things that anyone who's been listening to the network for long enough knows that we seem to have the touch. And
you've got the touch.
Yeah, exactly. And what I mean by that is often on the network, and it is not limited to just this show, it's been different shows over the years, that one of us, one of the hosts, will mention something or will cover something and we'll say, oh, geez, it would be great if X existed. And
Lady then Cop. Lady Cop.
Lady Cop. Yeah, exactly. Great example.
First issue special. I mean, there's so many things that have come.
Exactly. So many things that we have talked about. Who's who? Mm-hmm. We did a who's who show and now it's back in print. It's insane.
Justice League International omnibuses. I mean, lots and lots.
The list goes on and on and on. And I thought it would be kind of funny to try and end the show sort of manifesting some change that we want to see in the world. So we decided that Shag and I came up with a list of a couple of things each of just stuff that in related to either comics or pop culture in general doesn't. I have a couple of things that are not comics, but they're movie related that I want to see exist. And maybe by saying them out loud, that will somehow inspire the universe, the chaos theory, to get them to come into creation. And if that happens, we will get to take credit for it. And it also ends the show on a more positive note. So that's the idea.
we did an Aquaman and Firestorm show. And a couple of years later, you get an Aquaman movie.
But
and
you get, there you go.
And you get Firestorm as
on
a regular
TV show
on TV. So, I mean, come on. Yeah.
Yes.
We did. When, yeah. We're doing something here.
We've talked about that. When we started the show in 2011, dear God, when we started the show in 2011, if someone had said to us, 10 years from now, Firestorm will be on TV and Aquaman will be in a movie, we'd be like, get the F out of here. That's
right.
Not going to happen. That is ridiculous. And now... Yes. We're so inundated with the stuff that we can be negative about an Aquaman movie. You know, like that's how spoiled we all
right.
are.
They, so, even, yeah. they even name comic books after our podcast now. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, how many things do you have on your list? Because I came up with a bunch. I don't want to.
Oh, really? I have three.
Okay, I'll limit mine to four.
No, you can read them all. Just rapid fire them after a while. So
okay, all right.
So why don't you start? Because you have a larger list.
Okay. Well, all right.
We'll go back and forth or something.
Yes, absolutely. So inspired by a tweet from Dr. Ange, where he posted a image of a Jim Aparo. I think it's of Jim Corrigan coming out of the ground, I believe. Mm-hmm. But that inspired me to say, I wish there was a DC. I wish there was a hardcover collection of Jim Aparo's DC horror work. Because he did stories for their horror titles. Not a lot. The Demon Within is like the classic story, but he did enough that I think you could get a decent sized trade paperback out of it. And of course, it's being Jim Aparo. The work is top notch and it's not that stuff's not really been collected. I mean, obviously, Batman, his work on Batman has been collected and his other runs are, you know, that's the more famous stuff. But I think it would be really cool to have the horror work of Jim Aparo. So I wish that book existed.
That's a really cool idea. All okay. right. My first one is for Amazon to rebrand Comixology as Amazon Comics. I've put this idea ahead before, but now I'm hoping that this magical powers we have will make something happen. Rebrand it as Amazon Comics, preload it on every Kindle tablet they make, make it super easy to download on Apple and Android devices, and Marvel and DC and other publishers just make hundreds, not their whole catalog, but just hundreds of comics available to read for free. So that way, every kid who picks up a tablet, either if it's a Kindle, it's already a button there that says comics, right? They can go right there and start reading comic books for free to get the comics in the kids' hands. This is the modern day equivalent of what we used to talk about, putting comics in grocery stores and whatnot. It's the modern day equivalent. Put it on the freaking tablet already downloaded. Have it there for them. I realize that's not going to happen for an Apple and Android device, but you know, at least make that app easy to get your hands on and give them a bunch of comics to read for free and hook the kids early. Get the comics in the hands of the kids. They're the ones who would appreciate it.
That's a great idea. I love that idea.
All right, okay, what you got?
My next ones, I'm going to do two right in a row because they're kind of similar. Very quickly, there need to be trade paperback collections of the Son of Tomahawk run. I know I go on and on and on about that. I never stop talking about it, but it's never been collected and it needs to be. And then the other collection, there should be a omnibus of the Mark Evanier, Dan Spiegel, Blackhawk comics. Those are still out of print. And that run is 22 issues long. It's fantastic and it should be in print.
Okay. I'm down with that. All right. I would like a new kids cartoon that introduces kids to the whole wide cast of DC characters, you know, like Justice League Unlimited did and Batman Brave and the Bold did and Justice League Action did. Like, I don't care what platform it's on, you know, Max or Amazon, or I don't really give a crap. Just make it easy for kids to watch. You know, it's a loss leader. You know, obviously, I guess I got kids in the brain, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, it's a loss leader. You're not going to make money on it. That's why they killed Justice League Action too soon, because I guess they didn't think they're making money. It doesn't matter if you make money from this cartoon. It is what's called a loss leader, which means you lose money on it because the money you're going to make on the back end. You hook these kids when they're young, and the lifetime value, the dollar value of them as a lifetime fan of DC Comics is incalculable. So give us another Justice League Action. Give us another Brave and the Bold. Give us another JLU. I don't care. But put it out there and make it easy for kids to watch. Again, every episode have some new bonky character. Space Cabby was a supporting character in Justice League Action. That's amazing. Some kid grew up knowing who Space Cabby is. And I want that for kids for tomorrow.
Agreed. And props to Space Cabby. That's a great – that would make a great show, a great anthology show where he's the character and everyone's a different story.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing. It'd be absolutely amazing. Okay. So I have two. I have three more. So two of them I'm going to lump together because they're similar themed, movie related, not comics related. One is, then this is very obscure, everybody, and I'm owning that. Everyone knows, anyone listens to Film and Water, I'm a massive fan of Albert Brooks. I'm a mega fan of Albert Brooks. I have committed all of his movies to memory. His first four as director, I think, are absolute masterpieces. Of those four, 1979's Real Life, 1980's Modern Romance, 1985's Lost in America, 1991's Defending Your Life. Real Life, which is a parody of reality television before that was even a thing, is not on Blu-ray. It is the only movie of his not on Blu-ray. Drives me nuts because I have the other ones on Blu-ray. Some of them are part of the Criterion Collection. They're all given the deluxe treatment with audio commentaries and interviews. And Real Life, for whatever reason, has not been given that honor. Now, Real Life is owned by Paramount, which just happens to be, in the grand sense, my employer. And so, and in the meantime, since the last time you and I did Fire and Water, Shag, I have since become a, I guess, a proto film historian, in that my I have done audio commentaries for movies on Blu-ray. You can go out and buy them, and I have three out available now.
Well, let's be clear, you got paid for it, which means professional. Yes. Well, no, I mean, the distinction is doing it for free like we do right now is because we're stupid. You got paid, which therefore makes you a professional.
I have become a professional. I you know, film historian is a little highfalutin, and I don't know how comfortable I am with it.
But you're very comfortable. You use it all the time.
I know. I'm bullshitting. I completely love it. So, and I call that on my website, so whatever. It's fine. But yes, but I have since I have started to do that, and it is a literal dream come true. Ever since DVDs were invented 30 years ago, I have said I've always wanted to do this, and I don't know how I will ever be qualified enough to do it. Well, through sheer force of will, that has now happened. And so there are three movies out there that have my name on them, and there are, I have at least three coming out this year. So in 2024. So I'm working on another one right now. So it is just the greatest thing. Anyway, Real Life, not on Blu-ray, owned by Paramount, my company. I think you know where you're going with this. So I reached out to the people in Paramount's home video department, and I pitched myself to them just saying, hey, look, I am someone in the company that I do this professionally. And in case you need audio commentaries done for movies that you have on your slate, this is something I can do. And I, you know, spoke to somebody. I can't get into the details, but I spoke to somebody and they were very nice about it. And then I felt so comfortable enough that, like Babe Ruth, I called my shot and I said, look, you own a movie called Real Life. And the person I spoke to actually knew the movie because they were an Albert Brooks fan. They said, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, look, I understand. Albert Brooks doesn't do commentaries for his own movies. He just doesn't do that. He's because he's not interested or they can't get him or whatever. I said, look, if you ever decide to put Real Life on Blu-ray, I have to do this. I am absolutely born to do this. So that's me manifesting that to see if it happens. But I want to put it out there to get Real Life on Blu-ray. And as a side story, I'm sorry I'm going on and on about this, but as a side story, last year or 2 years ago, I went to one of those monster horror cons that they have, and one of the guests was an actress named Frances Lee McCain. Now, you don't know the name, you know the face. She's the mom in Gremlins that throws the gremlin into the microwave. She's in Back to the Future, and that's why she was there, because it was a Back to the Future Gremlins. Those are her genre credits and everything. Mm-hmm. But I walked up to her and handed her Real Life on DVD, and she lit up. Mm-hmm. She was so excited. And I said, and she's like, oh my God, this movie. And I said, am I going to be the only person that hands this to you this weekend? She's like, probably. And she signed it for me, and she spent 10 solid minutes talking to me about the movie, telling me what it was like to make it, how fun it was, all the detail. It was heaven for me to talk to this woman. It was so nice, but getting to talk to somebody that was in an Albert Brooks movie, I could not have been more excited. And so even when they put it on Blu-ray, I will not get rid of my DVD, because my DVD is signed by Francis Lee McCain. I will never get rid of that. Okay.
That's an incredible story. That's also, and by the way, speaking of these DVD commentaries or Blu-ray commentaries, I should say, it really is amazing that you're doing this, and I'm so proud for you, and we're all thrilled for you. And I'm looking forward to your Behind the Green Door commentary you've got coming up.
It's going to be lit.
But seriously, though, man, it's been a long road, and you deserve this. So we're all very happy for you.
Thank you. I loved movies ever since I was a child, and the idea that there's movies now with my name on the back is just I can't believe it. You know what I mean? When it comes in the mail, I'm like, oh my God, I can't, there's my name on this thing. So, okay. The other thing related to movies, speaking of,
my God, you're still going.
I'm still going. Yeah. This is a long list, man. I got a lot of manifesting to do. My wife and I are moving. We are moving out of New Jersey. In fact, the next time that Shag and I record together, we will be quasi neighbors since I am moving to Florida, everybody.
I had no part of this. I did everything I could to stop it. Apparently, Florida injunctions are worthless, so it is what it is.
As I said in the Fire and Water thread, which I mentioned earlier, fact one, I continually make fun of Florida. Fact two, I am moving to Florida. Fact three, I will still continue to make fun of Florida because Florida deserves to be made fun of. But so does New Jersey, and I've lived here my whole life. But yes, my wife and I are packing up and moving to Florida. We can't stand the winter anymore. But so we're getting rid of stuff. And so we're thinning out various things, and I'm thinning out some of my movies. We're selling them back to used record stores and things like that. And I'm a big snob in that if I can replace something on DVD with a Blu-ray, I'm going to do it because Blu-ray is better format, better picture, yada, yada, yada. Kelly makes fun of me all the time that I do that. Like, I'm a big snob. But one of the things
you are.
Yes. But one of the things I can't get rid of is the original Star Wars trilogy. Because those original versions are still not on Blu-ray because George Lucas buried them somewhere. Well, George Lucas is not involved in Star Wars anymore. It's been a long time. They were buried on the DVDs. They're on disc two of DVD releases. They're in the wrong aspect ratio, and there's all sorts of it. They did no tuning up of them at all. It was like a half-assed, like, okay. You really want the one where Jabba doesn't get his tail stepped on by Han Solo? Here it is. And it's buried, but they're there.
Yeah.
And it is the only digital versions of the original Star Wars movies that you can get.
I hadn't thought about that because I own those too. Yeah. Right.
They need to be on Blu-ray. Those original versions need to be on Blu-ray. Come on, Disney. You've waited. I know that I'm sure Lucas has made it really difficult, but at a certain point, he must not care anymore. Get those out on Blu-ray. They need to be on. Those original films need to be on Blu-ray.
Do I need to be super pedantic and point out that A New Hope's still not the original version because the original version didn't have that on there?
Episode 4. It was called Star Wars, right. Yeah. But just for film historians' sakes, those original, I'm not even going to get into whether the newer versions are a blight against God or whatever. I just think those, especially the original Star Wars, one of the most important films ever made in the history of cinema, it should be available in the nicest format possible.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree with that. It should be available streaming as well. You should be able to watch
it. It should be on Disney Plus. Yep.
Okay. All right. Do I actually get a turn now? Is that how this works?
I got one more, but sure, go ahead and talk.
Lord. Okay, well, I have an extra long one, thank goodness, to make up for all the time I didn't get to talk. So this one is very specific. This is more in your wheelhouse. So, all right. So I am asking for the cosmic beings that are the ones that grant our wishes. I am asking for another wave of DC retroactive comic books. DC last did this in 2011. Rob doesn't even know what the retroactive comics are, so this will be a fun treat for him. and the reason I'm pushing for this is, like, right now, the facsimile editions of comic books are crazy popular, right? Like, these facsimile editions, which are, they reprint, like, you know, I don't know, Batman Year One, the first issue. They reprint it with the same ads and the same colors and everything like that. These facsimile editions are actually outselling new comics right now for both Marvel and DC. So there's obviously a massive interest in old stuff, right? But those are the old stories. So what I think is fun is the retroactive books they did in 2011. What it does is it reunites old creative teams for new stories in those continuities. Like what they did, Rob, with these retroactive books is, like, they had Jerry Conway write a new Justice League Detroit story. that took place back in that era. You know, they brought in, the guys from Green Lantern to write a new Kyle Rayner story that took place in that, you know, 1990s continuity, things like that.
I read that comic. The JLA one. Yeah.
All right. So I want to get one more story from all these amazing creators that built DC's intellectual property and, you know, give those creators some money on the other side, too. And so I've got a list of suggestions here. And I realize some of these are not practical or feasible. And quite frankly, if you're going to get in the comments, I don't care about the personal grudges some of these people have with their publishers. I don't care about the creators' politics. That's not what this is about. I just want to read some great stories from these creators. So here we go. I would love to see Frank Miller and Dave Mazzucchelli get together for another early Batman story.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Let's go for it, man. Let's shoot the moon here. Why not?
I mean, Miller's been writing for DC off and on once in a while. So Grant Morrison and Howard Porter back together on a JLA story from the 90s, right? Get Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Praise be his name. Drawing a DC Comics Presents issue. You know, team Superman up with somebody.
Oh my God.
Give Mike Grell a Green Arrow story, for God's sakes. You know, John Ostrander and Luke McDonald, have them do a Suicide Squad story. I mean, you got movies out there supporting that. John Ostrander and Tom Mandrake doing Spectre, right? Doing an issue of that. You could have Roy Thomas and Jerry Ordway do an All-Star Squadron issue.
Oh, man.
Why not? You know? Yeah. Yeah. Get Mike W. Barr and Alan Davis. I realize neither one of them are going to work for DC again, but get them to do a Batman of the Outsiders, you know? Get Roger Stern and Butch Geist to do Superman. This one, I really want to see Mark Waid and Humberto Ramos do a Flash story again. That would be awesome. I want to see Ron Mars and Daryl Banks do another Green Lantern story. They did one in the last retroactive. We'll bring it back again.
Jeff Johns, Joe Prado, and doing Aquaman.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's what, 13 years old now? So sure, why not? Chuck Dixon and Tom Grummett do Robin again. You know, that was a great run. Get Carl Kiesel and Tom Grummett to do Superboy. Or like the Ray, you could get Christopher Priest or Jack Harris. Either one of them both worked on the Ray. Get Joe Quesada. He's not on Marvel's guy anymore. Have him do a Ray story. Or in yours and mine's particular wheelhouse, this is not your favorite creative team, but you could get Peter David and Marty Eglin together to do another Aquaman story. You know, the Hooked Aquaman. Or get Jerry Conway and Chuck Patton to do a JLA story.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. Jerry Conway and Pat Broderick to do a Firestorm story. Why not? So there's so many great creators out there that honestly, they've retired. They'd probably be thrilled to put together a 22-page script for fun. I mean, you pay them for it, obviously. You know, and artists that are always out there. These artists are still going to conventions and doing sketches. They're still drawing. They can do this. They might need more time. They might not be able to crank it out in a month. But all of this is doable. And I think it would be fantastic to have another wave of those retroactive books. Because what they would do is they'd do a new story on the front. They'd package it with a classic story on the back half. And you'd have some fantastic stories that would be awesome to revisit. So that's my comics wish.
That's a marvelous. Those are all great suggestions. I mean, a Miller. I'd be afraid to read a Miller Batman comic as by the current version of Frank Miller. But David Mazzucchelli taking another bite at the Batman apple. Yeah, sign me up for that. So
yeah,
that would be Chuck Patton.
Right,
Chuck Patton doing Justice League again. Oh my God.
He's still drawing stuff all the time. You see it on Facebook.
I mean, can I plus one you're suggesting? Craig
Absolutely.
Hamilton drawing Aquaman again.
Oh, yeah.
Do that.
Now, we wouldn't have Neil Posner to write it because he wrote the miniseries, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But you could pair him with
Neil's no longer with us. Yeah.
Yeah. But you could pair him with somebody else, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. You love it. The great suggestions. Okay. So my last one is a comic, another comic related one. Later on this month, DC is putting out a facsimile edition of the limited collector's edition Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, whatever you say it, collection, and it's in the treasury size, which to me is so exciting. Now, DC has been doing hardcover reprints of some of their treasuries. Curiously enough, like The Bible and The Amazing World of Superman, like kind of an odd selection. This one is not in hardcover, so therefore it's not available like on Amazon. You got to get it through comic shops, and boy, howdy, if I had some trouble doing that. But nevertheless, I am so thrilled that they are reprinting this book. It's one of the best treasuries DC ever did, featuring a wraparound cover by Neil Adams that is one of the greatest things he's ever done. Alex Ross says so. And it's done in the treasury format for $14.99. And I just think that is so awesome. And
wow.
I want DC. Yeah.
That's a great price.
Yeah, it's not a bad price. I want DC to do more of these, namely Superman versus Spider-Man. There just is no good reason why that book is, yes, it's been reprinted. in trade paperback form, but not as a treasury. And it is the ultimate treasury comic. There is no good reason why DC cannot put that back out as a treasury, either as a hardcover or a facsimile edition.
To kind of egg the ether there a bit, you know, they're working on a Marvel DC collection again. Like they're collecting the Marvel and DC.
Yes, they are.
One of the stories. I don't remember which. What. So Marvel and DC are working together again.
Yep.
And so this could be a real possibility.
I'm sure legally it's really complicated because you got to have two companies signing off on it, but there's money to be made there. Mm-hmm. There just is. And so if DC is going to start doing facsimile editions in the treasury size, I'm hoping that means they're going to do more. I'm doing my best. I ordered two copies of the damn book. I'll give one away as a contest over in Treasury Cast. But obviously my wish list would be do all the treasuries as a facsimile edition, do them all, do Rudolph, do everything. But if I'm trying to remain a little humble, start with Superman versus Spider-Man. It's the natural place to begin that first team up.
Not Superman celebrates the centennial? That's weird. Okay.
As exciting as it would be to see Tomahawk on nice paper. no, I'll go with Superman versus Spider-Man.
So that Batman one, that's, if I remember right, that was like they just collected essentially a run of Batman, the Neil Adams comics, right? So it was
Denny
like
O'Neill, like Ra's al Ghul stories. Yeah. Yes,
it was like one of the first trade paperbacks, essentially.
Basically,
kind of what it was. Yeah.
Yes, it's absolutely fantastic.
That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Great, and I'm just so thrilled that they're doing it as a treasury. Mm-hmm. That's so I just absolutely love it. So DC, please do more of these.
Yeah. Good suggestions. All right.
Yes. See, that wasn't a fun way to end the show. It was so much better.
Exactly.
Hopefully, we're on the Aquaman movie.
Hopefully we're gonna make some of these things happen, folks. Putting it out there, and we're gonna try our best.
All right.
Well, folks, feel free to go out to our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. Look for the Aquaman and Firestorm show. Leave your comments on the website there. There'll be all kinds of folks chatting with you as well. You can also find us on the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Blue Skies is Fire and Water Podcast Network or FW Podcasts. And leave your thoughts there. We'd love to hear from you. And we don't know when we're gonna do another episode. It's probably going to be a year. I don't know. I got some Firestorm ideas kind of kicking around in the back of my head, but I got to figure out how to gel together into a coherent thing where it's not me just going, I really like Firestorm. He's really cool. Because I do want to talk about him again. I like the old match, Ed. So. But we will make something happen. So, Rob, where can people find you nowadays?
Actually, I have a brand new spanking website thanks to the efforts of fan of the network and often the Aquaman's weed dealer, Brett Young. He built you don't get that joke because you don't listen to For All Mankind.
Well, but, I would like to point out that it's not a spanking website. Even though Rob just said he built a brand new spanking website.
New. I said spanking new. I believe
well, either I way, it's not. If you're going anyway, looking for spanking, it's others, a. Anyway.
They go on the dark web for that. But no, yes, I have a brand new website. It's called Rob Kelly Creative, and it features all I've been wanting for years to get this put together. And thanks to Brett, I now have one, and it's a place that has all my illustration work and my writing, because I still write the Real Metro Cinema column for 13th Dimension, all my articles for back issue, my and links to and samples of my audio commentaries for movies, and links to all the various podcasts that I do, at least my solo show. So anything,
yeah, I'm not linked on there at all.
No, not at all. And so it's like a communist, it's like a Stalin communism, just erase people out of the histories. But no, I'm really proud of the website. Brett did an absolutely marvelous job. He was kind of a pain in the ass to deal with, but it was worth it in the end. So you can find all of my stuff, there, robkellycreative.com.
No, it's a great looking website. It really is phenomenal. It's a way to go, buddy.
Thank you very much.
All right, so I think that's going to do it. And until next time, whenever that might be, folks, remember to fan the flame
and ride the wave.
Aquaman and Firestorm fighting crime together. Soak them down
or burn them up.
No one does it better. Whenever you find trouble, they'll always be there to catch them in a bubble
or even torch their hair.
They stand for truth and justice
in sea, on land,
in air. Aquaman and Firestorm, they make a super pair. Aquaman
and Firestorm,
super friends forever. Yeah.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Wait, Aquaman. There are four other ships. Head heading for Atlantis.
We've got to stop them, Tadpole.
I want to go with...
No. You go to the Aqua Cave.